Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it? Podcast like it's 1999.
Podcast like it. Just podcast like it. Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it? 1999.
Welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999. I am your host, Phil Iskove, and with me today is Brian Cogman.
Right. Hello, everybody.
Back to talk about
Hello,
ER.
Hello, Podcast
again.
Nation. Podcast 99 Nation.
I saw an opportunity to be able to talk about ER again with Brian Cogman, and there was no way that I was going to pass up that opportunity. You know, ER, this is sort of, and we'll get into this. For people that have listened to the previous episode that Brian was on, about ER. We talked about George Clooney leaving the show mid-season five.
In early 99, I guess.
Early 99, right? Yeah. It was very early in 99. This is near the tail end of 99. This airs November 25th, 99, around Thanksgiving. And it feels like there's an opportunity. First of all, there was the reunion that happened a few months ago, which was interesting to watch on Zoom. Clooney, just charming as ever.
George Clooney.
Just the fucking best.
Just, you know, marry me. I just, you know, come on.
Yeah. But I want to kind of...
He's had a great week. They republished his, like, takedown of David O. Russell, too. It's like, you're a goddamn fucking rock star, man.
And we did Three Kings with a fellow screen drafter. Darren.
You did it with Darren. Oh yeah, I haven't listened to it yet, but yes. Oh great, I love Three Kings.
It was a great episode, and it was great to sort of talk about the friction between him and David O. Russell. But what I kind of, being a big ER fan that you are, I kind of want to talk about this. And this kind of, I guess this also feeds into Game of Thrones a little bit too, which is characters leaving shows and the vacuums that they can leave behind. I look at ER and it feels like there's pre-George Clooney, there's George Clooney, and then there's post-George Clooney. I feel like they never really were able, the show was successful without him, no question, but it always felt as though they lost a limb when he left the show. How do you feel about sort of what this interesting little vacuum here of, it's a season and a half where before Carol leaves the show.
Yeah.
And I always think when she leaves the show, it's kind of over for me a little bit. Those first six seasons are when the show is at its best to me.
So. Sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, did we say what the episode was? Great
Expectations is the episode that we're talking about today. Yeah. The one where Carol delivers twins.
The twins, yeah. Yeah, you know, you're right. I think to a degree you're right. The core cast was, I mean, Sherry Stringfield is the one who leaves first.
Correct.
But But the show didn't really miss a beat, and that's no knock on Sherry Stringfield at all. And she comes back, although she comes back, it's so strange.
She comes back, weird.
And it's not the same character.
It's not really the same character, right?
It isn't Susan Lewis.
It's not.
Which is really bizarre.
Sherry Stringfield, it feels like.
Maybe it is. Yeah, and I don't know Sherry Stringfield.
Just feels like she's like, yeah, I'll say these lines.
Yeah, they just sort of gave her a new personality, and none of her, apart from her fuck-up sister, none of her, whatever, we're not talking about fucking Susan Lewis.
No.
Watch, I've already gone,
dude,
this is what happens when you get me to start talking about
seasons.
ER.
A lot to talk about.
5 seconds into the Juliana Margulies episode, I'm going to rant about the arc of Susan Lewis played by Sherry Stringfield. This is what's going to happen, folks. Just
great.
Get ready. But you know, she left and the show just chugged along. Mm-hmm. You're right. When Clooney leaves, it's and because also he was such a juggernaut at the time.
He was a star.
He was such a star. And it was kind of a big deal that he stayed, they always said, you know, because Caruso famously left NYPD Blue, his second movie started, came a Corton. And Clooney was like, no, I'm going to do it. Going to finish the contract. And he leaves. And we've talked about this. I think the way they got rid of Ross was really good and made sense with the arc that they had established for him. Yeah. And but it left us with a real problem. It left the writers with a little conundrum because they, Carol and Doug were such a power couple there at that point, and the characters very much in love and making plans, and they didn't manufacture a breakup, which was refreshing. They could have manufactured a breakup a few episodes before Clooney leaves to sort of deal with the fact that he's leaving, but they didn't. But it left them with a problem because he leaves, she's pregnant, they're very much in love. He really is only moving to Seattle. Why aren't they talking? Why aren't they speaking? They didn't really break up, but they did. And it's an impossible problem because the producers of the show, they're like, they want to keep as many of their core cast together as possible. Mm-hmm. So I think the modus operandi in at least the first part of season six was, we've got to convince Juliana Margulies behind, and maybe you know more about this. This is pure hypothesis on my part, but it seems to me, clearly, they were trying to figure out how she stays, and the lawyers are trying to negotiate a contract or making her an offer to stay. And so they're keeping the Doug Rosses in Seattle still in the air just enough so that if she does leave, she can go to Doug. But otherwise, they're on a break or whatever the hell it is. And here's Luka Kovac, fresh off the boat from Croatia. And maybe they're going to get together. Should we test if the audience will accept this? Okay, here we go. And they're still doing that here in this episode, you know, with him in a very Doug Ross. Seriously, part of me wants to scream at that. Don't you carry her? Don't you carry her? Luka Kovac.
For context, Carol passes out and Luka has to carry her to the ER.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry, viewers.
I'll just say, I agree with
don't
everything
you
saying.
Carry her romantically, Kovac.
In terms of the Juliana Margulies of it all, from all accounts, it seemed as though she had no intention of staying with the show. I mean, she turned down $17 million for a season.
Holy
I mean, they were
shit.
Literally going to pay her $17 million to do a seventh season of the show, which is a testament to how staggeringly successful this show was that they
could, and how essential she was. At that point.
Right.
Absolutely.
So from all intents and purposes, it feels like she never intended to stay. That being said, they did plant seeds if they could keep her with Luka. I think that in terms of the Doug Ross connection of it all, I mean, there's like weird stuff of him like mailing her animal crackers.
Well, yeah, and like sending faxes and shit. Like faxes. You're sending her faxes? Which, you know, again, sorry, I've got a frog in my throat today. I understand what they, it's not the writer's fault. Like they do what they can do. Like they don't have George to call in and do a scene every once in a while. They have her. They have to keep her on. They have to acknowledge his.
Yes.
they impregnated her with twins.
Yep, they did.
So, what are you going to do? And to your original question about actors leaving, you know, I mean that this is the main difference between, you know, 90s proper network television drama, which you know, these heroic writers had to come up with 22 hours a year of high quality television, which they
somehow did.
Good God, it's just astonishing. And you're rolling with what you got. And you know, in the case of our show, up until season five or so, I mean, the deaths were all predetermined by the books
anyway.
It was an entirely different thing. And then by the time we started ourselves deciding who was biting the dust, it was as the show was going toward its ending anyway. And it was just an entirely different set of problems to have. And we only had 10 episode seasons. And then at the end, we only had, you know, 7 and 6 episode seasons. So it's such a different animal. It's impossible to compare. I think for them, you know, it's like we have this stable of actors. We need to keep the ones who are great and make the show go as long as possible. And yeah, as a result, season 6 of ER is kind of weird. It has two of the best episodes of the entire series in the back half, which we talked about at length in the last ER episode.
Stabbings.
Which is the stabbings, and then poor Kelly Martin and Benton running down the hall to get to Carter. Sorry.
I'm glad it's you.
I'm glad it's
when Carter says that before he goes under.
I can't do it. Benton's not in this episode, which is good, because if Benton were, I would just go on a Carter Benton rant.
It's weird he's not in. Truthfully, this is a very Benton, it's a very Carol heavy episode, understandably.
Yeah, I mean, this was a little love letter to Juliana Margulies, which as she well deserved any so and every love letter they gave her. And haha, it's the other thing it's doing though. It's introducing the woman who might be her replacement, but we don't know because we don't know if she's coming back or not. But here she is. Do you like her? This is a passing of the torch too. Juliana likes her. Carol thanks her at the end. You should feel safe with her. What if she's...
It's true.
And,
it's true.
And I will say, yes, when Doug Ross and then Carol Hathaway leave, you are definitely firmly out of glory days, golden age ER. Mm-hmm. You know, you are out of the time capsule episodes of the greatest television can be era. Mm-hmm. That said, you don't replace her with Maura Tierney as Abby Lockhart. You don't have the rest of the show.
Oh, I agree that, this
Maura
is something
Tierney
that
was a casting triumph.
An absolute triumph. You know? I think that this show may be more so than any other show, when it comes to a revolving door of casting, found a way to keep this show afloat for 15 seasons.
Yeah, they did.
Which is a testament to great casting. And it's not the same with, and I know that people compare ER and Grey's Anatomy, and they're both medical dramas and they both had a lot of characters come and go.
Right.
And I quite like Grey's Anatomy. I'm not suggesting that I don't. But I do think that this show, in terms of the specificity of the types of actors that they plugged and played on this show, I think the casting was just absolutely off the charts. I think I've been trying to watch all 15 seasons with my roommates, you know, periodically over the course of the pandemic. And we're at season 11 now. Okay. It is trying. It is hard
how many there
to
are.
Get through 15.
Season 11 is when, because there's
it
a period
tough.
Where you're like, oh, here we go. Like, and then they
season eight
pretty nicely.
I think it's 8 that is brutal.
Is it when Mark dies?
No, I think Mark dies. Forgive me. I don't remember which season it is, but there's a season. Yeah. And I don't mean to single out a writer because it's not fair to do. But Jack Orman, when he show ran the show, was my least favorite seasons of the show.
Okay.
Now, Jack Orman writes this episode, and I actually quite like this episode. I don't think that Jack Orman is a bad writer. And I don't even want to suggest that it's his fault that the show did what it did under his tutelage.
There's so many factors, as you know.
There's so many factors. But it does feel like the show, what Dave Zabel takes over the show when John Stamos comes in near the tail end. And I actually think the show is quite strong in its final seasons. And I would argue that NBC at many times would probably have loved to have ER back on its schedule, just in terms of, you know, but licensing deals are expensive.
Yeah.
But I do think that the casting situation on this show is tremendous, and I agree with you that it keeps
so much
the show
more. It hits so much more than it misses. I mean, and you're sure there are misses, and it's like with any long running show, you try someone out and it's like, oh, never mind. And, you know,
right.
We'll talk about Mellucci in a second, you know. So, I think Maura Tierney,
strike a genius.
I will say, if they hadn't cast her specifically, with all the other successes that I just grant you, I don't think the show goes on another 5 years, let alone 10 or 12. Maura Tierney was just, she has the same sort of magnetic star quality that Margulies has, the same earthy, I believe this is a working lady, a working middle class, you know, doctor, but also and a very unique and specific beauty and sexiness and emotional availability and sense of humor, while also never feeling like a carbon copy of Carol Hathaway and very much being her own thing. And that's a testament to the writing, of course, as well. So, yay for her. And so it was fun to watch this. I hadn't watched this one in a while. So it's funny, when we did the last episode,
Storm,
this, coincidentally, at that time, I think I mentioned, I was doing not a full rewatch, but I was watching like the 10 or 12 kind of essentials per season. And for some reason, this was not one that I rewatched in that rewatch. So I hadn't seen this episode since it aired. So it was fun to be like, oh, right, of course, this is the... And they even say, and Maura Tierney as Abby Lockhart. Ding, ding, this is important. Pay attention. News radio lady on the show. It was great. It was fascinating to see, okay, they are seeding a possible Kovach-Hathaway relationship here with his heroics. It's the first time he mentioned his dead wife and kid, although not saying it's a dead wife and kid, which is a nice little thing. Mm-hmm. But then also introducing the woman who you know, she was going to be a series. Maura Tierney was going to join the show anyway, even if, which is why when she shows up as a series regular, is it later in this season? It is.
It is. It's five episodes later.
She comes into the ER later this season. When she shows up, oh yeah, I was a nurse, but now I'm back in med school. Because they were thinking, Carol's staying. So Maura Tierney's going to become a doctor. Then Carol leaves and they're like, never mind.
She's a nurse again.
She has no tuition, or her deadbeat husband takes it. She's a nurse again. Yeah. And she's a nurse for like 3 or 4 years. And then they're like, let's make her a doctor again, because now she's too much like Carol. And it all worked out just fine. But it was funny because I hadn't seen this episode in you know, however many years it was. 20 years. Even just slipping back into an episode of ER out of context, not having seen the ones. But it's just a warm blanket. It was just... I sat and watched it yesterday morning and was like, oh, gee, I should just more often. I should just at random put on an episode of ER and it plays, man. It's just
it knows itself so well, right? Like it's one of those things where obviously previous to this, we talked about The West Wing, both John Wells productions. And it is very interesting to see how comforting a show that is this sort of chaotic. Right. Like both of these shows are about like creating a sense of like just chaos. And yet you're just like, I just want to be there because everyone's competent and everyone's good at their job and they're going to save people. And it's great. I'm going to have a very brief synopsis of this episode. It's Thanksgiving and Hathaway has two more reasons to give thanks after overcoming complications and delivering twins, Tess and Kate. Green's family family celebration comes with its own complications, and Mellucci stuns the staff by actually having a valid idea to treat a patient that works. Great Expectations. We'll talk about Mellucci. Great Expectations aired on November 25th, 1999. It was written by Jack Orman. It was directed by Christopher Misiano. 30 million people watched this episode of television, which is a insane
good
thing.
Lord. The Thanksgiving episodes of must-see TV.
Sure,
you know?
But it's still like, what a testament to the fact that this show, season six, it's getting 30 million people tuning in. It's insane. And it would continue to have, I mentioned this earlier, but like even in its later seasons, it's getting 12, 13, 15 million people near the end of its run, which I'm sure NBC was just like, Jesus Christ, like how do we keep this thing on our air? You mentioned obviously it's the first appearance of series regular Maura Tierney as Abby Lockhart. I talked a little bit about sort of the vacuum, but it also feels a little bit like a transitionary season too, right? Like it feels as though,
yes,
because of the Carol of it all, they're not really sure what, there's a little bit of shifting sands, right? So they're, you know, Carter's being bumped up a little bit more. Obviously the Carter Lucy thing has a significant effect on Carter. He gets addicted to painkillers. And you have sort of that fallout, yeah, which leads him into the arms of Abby, who's also a recovering addict.
Right.
So like their sort of, their circles start to intertwine. You get a love triangle between Luca, Carter, and Abby that, as far as I'm concerned, is, mm-hmm, well, never late, really great.
And that's like season seven.
Yeah, seven, eight, nine. It gets deeper into it.
But then Carter saves his life in Africa. He goes in and he gets Kovach out. He's a one-man dirty dozen.
But like, did you ever feel chemistry between Carter and Abby?
No. No. It was a horrible mistake. No.
Yeah.
I mean, not a horrible mistake, but it was...
But no. it just never worked.
No, he could... Carter...
Noel Wiley has trouble with chemistry.
I mean, like, he and Thandwe Newton's stuff was ultimately very affecting.
I agree.
But probably
and he sort of ends up with her.
But probably because you barely saw her. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she came in for her bits and...
And they also dealt with a stillborn child. Oh, God.
I mean, yeah, they just, you know, they just... destroyed this
brutal
poor woman. But it's Thandwe Newton who's you know, amazing, transcendent. I'm trying to think of any of his romantic pairings.
Paramours.
Oh, you know who was great? He was great with fucking Glenn Headley in season two.
He was. And I actually thought he had interesting chemistry with, oh my God.
Oh, Christina Lise.
She was great. But why am I drawing a blank on Delamico?
Maria Bello. Yeah,
Left the show and didn't want to do it anymore.
I mean, the worst pairing ever is Carter and Lewis. Carter and the Bizarro Lewis.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Fuck was that? But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, this speaks to something that I think is really interesting, right? Which is that Carter becomes the de facto series lead, right? Because Green leaves. Anthony Edwards' character is killed off.
Yes.
And then it's Carter's show, right? The whole thing is put on Carter's shoulders. And to have the lead of your show have no romantic chemistry with anybody is tough, right? Because, you would love to have... So there is that. There's then the fact that like Noah Wiley gets into a situation where he starts wanting to transition off of the show. Mm-hmm. So then he's in like half the episodes.
Yeah, then Carter's sort of this specter that comes in and out. And it's actually kind of effective. I mean, you always miss Carter when he's not around. The show feels decidedly weird that I think there's only one full season where he's nowhere to be found. And that's
it's
not one that I enjoy.
He is the heart of the show, right? Yeah. I mean, he's... Part of it too is he's the audience in the pilot, right?
He's the med student.
Your,
yeah, totally.
And you're watching Carter's arc through series, right? So when he leaves, it does feel a little bit strange. Yeah. I do think that this episode, which feels very kind of self-contained, there's a simplicity to it, which is essentially Carol's having her babies, right? Yeah. So we open the episode with a really nice montage of her day and what it's like to be a single pregnant mother of twins.
She should really lock her door living in a urban Chicago house. Like, why?
I agree.
Carol, lock your door. You worked so hard for this house. Lock the door.
It's atypical of ER to do the sort of like calm before the storm. They don't do it that often. So there's something nice about getting to sort of slowly come into the episode.
Yeah, it's nice.
I'm going to lean on you pretty heavily in terms of the pregnancy stuff. Since I am not married, I don't have children. You have been through this.
I have carried
a couple times
children myself to term and birthed them.
I wasn't suggesting that you delivered them, but you at least have procreated on a couple occasions. And you have lived with a pregnant woman. You have gone through, I don't know if you've been in the delivery room of your children.
Yeah.
So you know what all of this is like. I don't. But I feel like this episode does a good job in terms of doing two things. One, which is a believable delivery in terms of like, it's drawn out a little bit up top. The labor part takes longer than you would think.
Typical of ER. They do throw a lot of stuff at Carol's two babies. Like, you know, and it never goes so far that it's totally ridiculous, but it comes right up to the edge of ridiculous where it's like, you know, Yep. The cords around the kid. There's lots of stuff that happens. But it never goes. They could have gone well into full on melodrama, which they mercifully don't.
But they get close.
And, you know, she's phenomenal. I mean, she's just, and my wife, you know, as someone who, I don't know if she wants me to share this, but I guess we're doing it. She totally preferred the epidural. And with our second child, she got the epidural. It was some weird timing thing where it wore off.
Oh, fuck.
And she was like, I'm feeling things. Give me more. Oh. And the doctor was sort of clueless and was like, no. And then he came, our child. And so she birthed our second child without the epidural. And I think from what she always said to me was, and this is why I sympathized with, it's actually interesting you ask this question about, because the first time I watched this, I was, you know, 20. This time I was like, I know from my wife's experience, natural childbirth is painful. Natural childbirth, when you mentally were not prepared for it and thought you were going to be able to do it on the drugs, is not only painful, but it's shocking and angering. And it was actually very traumatic for her.
I'm sure.
She talks about how it even sort of affected the first moments with Jake because they were both kind of like, what the fuck? You know, there's this great picture of my son and her, and she's holding him and she just looks exhausted. Right. And he's like, his little face is like, well, that was horrible. Jesus.
Well, it's interesting you say that because it does feel like.
So Carol is not happy about not having the drugs.
She's not happy.
That was very true.
They are given a gift in terms of storytelling, which is they get twins. So they get to really milk it.
I love that. And I'd forgotten she was pregnant with twins until they were like, okay, you'll have the other one upstairs. And I even laughed. I went, ha ha. Brilliant.
But it's brilliant, right?
Brilliant.
Like you can if it was just one kid, I think you'd be back in a Love's Labor Lost situation where you're really having to create more complications in order to build out the episode.
They could breathe in the middle. It was rather ingenious.
It's really smart.
Yeah.
So and a gift to the writers for sure.
Yeah.
I do think that she gets so Carol gets to the ER after being carried by Kovach
Who do you think you are, Kovach?
He carries her to the hospital, and Carrie delivers the first baby, which is relatively seamless. Everything goes relatively to plan.
Only in as much as that she has to do it in the ER, and so Carrie does it. Which, you know, it's funny. I forgot Carrie did it, and I remember when Clooney comes back in the final season, he's talking to Linda Cardellini and part of Inder Nagra, and disses Carrie to them.
Yes.
And I want to be like, Doug,
delivered your kid.
He delivered your fucking kid. He saved your fucking kid's life. Get the fuck over it, Doug.
Yeah.
But then I remember the writers and Clooney probably forgot that when they wrote that scene.
I mean, there's no way that Clooney knew what the fuck was going on with that stuff. But I do love that
Carrie
starts to deliver the baby. Carter wants to help. And Carol's like, get the fuck out.
Get the fuck out of here, Carter. I love that. And it's funny you mentioned Carter. This is the last few episodes of pre-stabbing Carter.
Because
after he's stabbed, the character, unlike Susan Lewis, the character is a different character, but it's very earned. And Noah Wiley, I think, calibrates that transition really beautifully. I think he's perennially underrated as an actor in general. He's phenomenal on the show. But that scene, it's funny when you mentioned that moment because it's very little Cardle. But I want to do the birth. I know how. You know.
It's great how he like takes
out.
Off the gloves and he's like, good luck. Like,
yeah, because it's all about you, Carter. It's all about you.
I totally agree with you. I never thought about that until you just mentioned it now. But it there's no question that Carter is haunted for all intents and purposes for the rest of the series by not just the stabbing, but his addiction afterwards.
Yeah, because the addiction rocks his entire world. And it makes him that guy that goes into Africa to get Kovach out. Get him out!
So ridiculous.
Let's do the season premiere of ER
in an
Africa episode. Because that's what we all want to watch.
So she delivers the kid. Before I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
This circles back to what we were talking a little bit earlier. yes, they're trying to tee up a potential Carol Kovacs relationship. Mm-hmm.
And it should be said, those scenes are very nice. And
I was just going to ask, have got on board with that?
Oh, no, I still wouldn't have gotten on board with it. Fuck no. No, I think they do kiss. They have them kiss.
They kiss once.
And I remember just wanting to throw things at the screen. Like, I was like, I was such my grandma with Days of Our Lives with this show. I was just like, right. No! No, fair. Fuck that. I wouldn't have accepted it. No reflection at all on Goran Vishnik, who I've always been, you remember from our old episode, I'm a Kovacs defender. I actually like more Kovacs than most. I quite like Goran Vishnik's performance and care quite a lot. The scene is very nice. I like the stuff with him in the beginning episode. Believe me, it's fine. It's just fine. But no.
But it is interesting. And obviously, Juliana Margulies agrees with you. I mean, one of the major reasons why she said she left the show was because she was just like, I can't see Carol with anybody else. And it's just, I don't want to... Had she stuck around and put her foot down and said, no romantic entanglements with anyone else,
right?
Carol would have eventually, there just wouldn't have been a ton to do with her. And I think that I think she understood rightfully that it was her time to leave the show. Now,
this opens a different discussion. And I'm curious what you think about this, because do you think there would have been nothing to do with her because for this kind of long-running workplace show, romantic romantic entanglements are kind of just, they have to happen? Because now that I think about it, there aren't any characters on the show that didn't have them. Because for a minute I was like, well, they always have to pair the woman with someone. But now that I think about it, they always had to pair the men too. Like, everybody had a love interest at one point, apart from, you know, Romano.
He was obsessed with Elizabeth. So like,
yeah, and even that was never a romantic subplot. It was unrequited. Right. Yeah. But what a creep. But yeah, I guess you're right. Like, if they couldn't give her any kind of relationship, then she just would have been this...
I mean, listen, I think that there's...
You know, female lead that... Yeah.
There's a world where the twins become her everything and she becomes a mom, nurse, and there's ways of sort of creating complications within that. You know, I guess ultimately... I don't mean to suggest that Carol's character wouldn't have had anything to do with a man to fulfill something for her.
No,
I'm certainly not suggesting that.
I don't think you were. No.
But I do agree with you that it does. This show, unlike The West Wing, was a show that had romantic entanglements.
That's the thing.
And it leaned into them. Yeah. It's part of the reason why I imagine the show was as successful as it was, right? It had a pretty significant soapy component.
It needed to. Because while, yes, they showed them at work the way that The West Wing shows them at work, work on The West Wing, you know, just the nature of what it was could sustain episodes in a way that didn't require a lot of, to the point where The West Wing is almost laughably not sexual.
Infrequently leave the West Wing. Like, how infrequently do we see those characters' personal lives outside of that show?
Right.
It's very infrequent.
And when you do, not to get on a West Wing thing, but when you do, it's like Sam Seaborn and Mallory McGarry, where, like, I don't think they ever sleep with each other, which is hilarious.
I think they kiss once.
It's like Rob Lowe. And
it's ridiculous.
Anyway, so yes, you're right.
I think they would have struggled with that a little bit with their character. And I think that they just probably... Listen, she turned down an unreasonable amount of money. It clearly was
important
to her.
She's smart. You know? She saw the writing on the wall and knew she was a star. You know, she had that show Between This and The Good Wife. What was that show?
Canterbury's Law. Was that what it was?
Right. It was a law. Yeah,
it was also a law show that she didn't. But yeah, I mean, then The Good Wife happens. Then she's got six seasons, seven seasons of that show. Yeah. So basically at this point, Carol delivers the first kid. She's taken up to OB where we meet Abby, Marcus Page, because he's her Lamaze coach.
Right.
Coburn enters the equation, which
good
is
old Coburn. Fuck yeah. Amy Aquino, man.
She's the best.
She's the best.
But also, it gives you that whole Love's Labor Lost thing, right? Which is hanging in the kind of this terrifying kind of cloud. Of
which
what
I really,
happened to
which
Mark.
I really liked that.
First of all, that sort of ominous component is interesting, but what's really cool is when Carol's wheeled in to the OR because mm-hmm. they need to do an emergency C-section. And Coburn says, do you want to assist on this? And he's like, not particularly. And
yeah.
she's like,
no, I like how subtle, I'm sorry, not unsubtle, how subtle it was. Like,
yes.
Clearly,
Mark
like, they
doesn't
like,
want to be involved.
They don't like each other.
Yeah.
They're both, they're professional. Their reputations were, both of them were really hurt by what happened. And, but you know, they're professionals and they're not gonna, you know, but get into it. But it's lovely the way they seed that in and acknowledge it, but don't make like, because the lesser show has her pull them aside and say, you don't want to happen what happened last time. You know, remember the last time you killed a woman who was having babies?
It also feels like, There's an insecurity a little bit to Mark. Carol means too much to him.
Yes.
And that he doesn't want to he needs to keep that distance.
Yes.
I mean, the only time that Green crosses any sort of a line is when he fights for them to not do a hysterectomy.
Which is really very moving and wonderful bit. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Anthony Edwards was
very good.
That's a treasure, you know. I mean, and it was nice to see. That was one of the successful things in the post Ross season and a half is how Mark steps in to sort of be her friend, and
their relationship really blossoms. Yeah.
Yeah, but in a way that's really not like, you know, again, the lesser show makes them fall in love or some bullshit. Mm-hmm. It's very truthful. It's really lovely. And all that stuff really, I mean, you know, she's just what a star. I mean, just watching this, and you know, this isn't one of the great episodes of ER mm-hmm. by any stretch, but she is just so magnetic, you know, and you love her, you just love
Hathaway
so much that.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You know, even 20 years later, watching it completely on its own, having not rewatched the lead up, you know, you're in it. It's such expertly made television, you know.
It really, really is.
In terms of craft, it's just, you know.
There's a scene that I wanted to highlight just real quick, rewind very quickly to the scene of Carol crying while she's getting the epidural.
Mm-hmm.
And she's hunched over and Mark's holding her and she's saying it hurts, like she's crying. She's like, it hurts so much. It hurts.
Yeah.
She is so good in that scene.
Oh, yeah.
Of just feeling a person who has already been through a delivery.
Yeah.
Has another one she has to go. She's just so drained.
She's
and
having
the
contractions, I think, as she's getting the epidural. Yeah. Oh, man.
And she just, there's something about her voice and how raspy and hoarse it is and how just like done she is.
Yeah.
Again, it's a testament to Juliana Margulies' abilities, but I really wanted to highlight this episode with you because I wanted to kind of highlight Carol Hathaway as a character.
Oh, sure.
And a character who, by the way, was not supposed to exist. A character that was supposed to die in the pilot.
Die in the pilot. Yeah. Show. Amazing.
Test audiences loved her, and they were like, we got to keep her. She's the only one to win an Emmy. Of the entire cast.
Which is objectively insane, but I'm glad it was her. But yes.
For twice. The first season. For a, well, just twice. Once.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
As supporting actor, she won, right, actress, that is, for season one, a season she was not supposed to exist in.
Right.
And it's a testament to how great she is. And I just love that Carol, you know, yes, they go through the whole, like, Carol wants to be a doctor and then decides she doesn't want to be a doctor. Like, yeah, there's
which,
stuff
which,
go through.
Which was also Margie Lee. She was like, hey, right, no, slap in the face to the fucking profession I have been portraying for the last years. So I'm really glad they reversed that. They then ended up doing it with Abby, you know.
Right. But like, they, you know, they give Carol the clinic. They give Carol, you know, all sorts of various sort of positions of power within her infrastructure of, of the nursing community. And I just think they do a really beautiful job. And then in this episode, you get to really see Carol go through the gauntlet of this delivery in a way that is really, to your point, dramatic, but not too dramatic. It's not melodramatic. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment that still haunts me that I think about to this day, which is when she sees all of her blood filling up the container. Yeah. And she goes, oh my God, I'm bleeding out.
Yeah.
And the reason it haunts me is it makes me think about Giovanni Ribisi in Saving Private Ryan when he gets shot. Oh, he's like, my liver, my liver, my liver. When someone knows about the fatality of their own injuries,
yes,
it just scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, like,
there's something so haunting.
There are a few little moments throughout where she's like, I'm a nurse, tell me why.
Right.
You know,
right,
like, and that's a fascinating thing, the idea of someone who's put in the opposite position of what they're normally in.
Right.
And because she's not a OB, she doesn't know, she doesn't need to be told certain things, but she knows enough to be told more than well, we just do it because it's good. It's like, no.
Right.
Great. Thanks. Tell me more. Cause I can understand you. I'm a ER nurse, which is great. But again, they don't overdo that. Like
they
pepper it in. It's all very well calibrated. You know, it's a very good solid script with that whole subplot for sure. And then yeah, Carol, you know, she was the heart of the show almost immediately. I mean, simply by the nature of the fact that she has the most dramatic subplot of the pilot. Mm-hmm. Because she was a day player supposed to die, but then because she survives, she then gets the most dramatic subplot of any of the actors.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, she's a, you know, a suicide survivor who has to come back in and reacclimate you know, she's
and the season ends with her with the wedding.
Well, it all revolved around her.
That didn't happen.
The entire thing was the wedding with the Taglieri. And then I think season one also had the little Russian girl she sort of tried to keep and it didn't work out. And so she very quickly became the heart of the show. And then what was great about it was it would have been very easy for her to just be the Doug Ross love interest character. And she never was. Even when she was, she always had her own stuff.
Yeah.
Her own very rich stuff that was not related to Ross.
Yeah.
And indeed, they did a nice job of getting her back together with Ross a while later. I mean, all of season two is the Ron Eldard thing and you know, her clinic and all of that stuff.
They don't kiss till the end of season three. That's when they get together.
Yeah. So it's they did a nice job with a sort of slow burn on that, but also not making it not unconsummated for so long that it becomes absurd. So
It's a real dance.
Her whole workplace dynamic with the other nurses and when she's put into a position of power and the awkwardness that ensues then. She was great. And the show could have suffered a lot more had they not brought in more tyranny. I think
they staunched the bleeding, if you will.
Very good. They staunched the bleeding. But this is a very good showcase for her. And again, not one of the great episodes of ER, but in a way it's good because if they tried to make it one of the great episodes of ER, it would have succumbed to a lot of the melodramatic stuff that I think.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's an interesting season of the show. I mean, in the sense that it really is sort of, I'm just kind of looking at it, you have the whole, like, obviously, Malucci, which doesn't work. He's a character that they just never really know what to do with.
Yeah. And he's fine. It's not really the actor's fault. Like, he's
no,
he, fine. Like, there's nothing. He's good. He's just, yeah. When someone's that much of an asshole and kind of an incompetent doctor, it's like, well, why am I watching him every week? Like, why is he
on the
opening credits?
It's this is the season where like they bring back Deb, so they bring back Ming-Na, which is interesting. But again, like there's a little bit of, I don't want to say circling the wagons, but there's a little bit of how many people can we bring back?
No, it's like, what do we do here? Cleo joins this season.
Cleo joins this season.
With her. And she's a very fine actor, and they never knew what to do with her.
They get rid of Lucy in this season, obviously. Right. So there's a lot of like, it just, you know, as I said earlier, it feels transitionary. It feels a little bit like we're trying to recalibrate all of these things. The season ends, you know, Carol leaves and is brought back, or sort of reconnects with Clooney at the end. Right. And then Carter is sent away to rehab at the end of the season.
In one of the great scenes of the whole season. The intervention and the fight with Benton and Carter. I can't.
And the final shot of them on the plane together.
It's talking about that.
It's the best.
So this season had a lot of big highs.
Yes.
It really did. But I think it's funny. It's interesting. It is. It is very much like, okay, they're really aware, even more than in season five, that this is the sort of, we got to see if we can keep this thing going or not. And they do, but there are some growing pains along the way. And this is also the season where, you know, and again, and this episode spends a lot of time with it, so it's apt that we talk about it, which there's never anything wrong with Mark and Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. Yeah.
But there's also never anything particularly right about Mark and Elizabeth. Like, they're both, they're fine together. Alex Kingston's great. But you know, poor Alex Kingston is then sort of, she had her own thing and her own agency and her own subplot.
Yeah.
And once she's with Mark, she's really Mark's love interest and defined almost entirely, with the occasional sexual harassment from Romano, almost entirely defined by Mark. Yeah. Even after Mark's gone, she's the grieving widow and she's dealing with Mark's fuck up daughter. So, she always acquits herself beautifully because she's a terrific actor. Anthony Edwards is a great actor. They're nice together. You feel bad for her when he dies. Like, it's not a disaster, but it's also like, and I felt the same thing with this episode. I'm like, oh, all right, we're cutting back to the Carol and Green family Thanksgiving. And you know, John Cullum, great actor.
Great actor.
I'm a musical theater nerd. He's one of the top tier great musical theater actors of all time. But that was a case of a character where when you meet that dude in season four, he's like a Eugene O'Neill bastard.
Yep.
And he's great. And he's kind of scary. It's that episode where they go back home to bury Doug's father or deal with Doug's father. Yes. And he visits his dad who hasn't seen in a while. And his dad's a real bastard.
Yeah.
Then he shows up in season six. And he's a kooky, funny old man who sings "They Call the Wind Mariah" at karaoke, and you're like, "That's not the dude from the episode before."
You know? No, I agree. When it did cut back to, I also thought it was a little too matchy matchy to have Rachel having her period in the episode that Carol's delivering.
It's
and a little too like cutesy to me.
They don't do anything with it. They don't have one.
Don't do anything with it.
They don't have like her getting her first period at her dad's with the stepmother. That's a great intro drama. Nothing happens. It is there purely so grandpa can take a fall.
It's weird.
On the way to get the sanitary napkins.
Yep.
So, you know, you're depriving Green of a great scene with his daughter. Like, that's all.
Or good. Elizabeth with a great
or
scene.
Or even Elizabeth. Like, they didn't even have that. Yeah. They don't have a scene. Yeah.
It's bizarre.
That's actually, now that we talk about it, it's an epic fail. Now the subplot's worse than I even think about it.
It wasn't great before, it's worse now. I agree. Yeah. It's unfortunate. There's a part of me, honestly, that kind of wished that the episode was a pure bottle episode.
No, I'm with you.
Pure bottle, just stick
all
with
her.
Carol the whole way through.
And I agree.
To be fair, she's 80% of the episode, so it's not like there's a ton that they cut away from her on.
Yeah, and I guess they would have had to manufacture a lot more medical emergencies, and they really come up to the edge anyway. So, yeah. You're probably right.
There's a great scene with Mark and her in between the deliveries where he's watching TV.
That's fun.
It's a cute scene because he's trying to want to talk? He's like, sure. What do you want to talk about? I don't know. Well,
and you know what's and actually, you know what's really great, and it's just occurring to me as we're talking about it. The reason that kind of works is they're not best friends. Like they love each other. They've worked together. He feels responsible for her. Yeah. Doug was his buddy, but they probably don't hang out one on one or never really did.
Yeah.
And this crazy circumstance has put them together here, and he loves her. But they really don't have anything to talk about.
Yep. It's great.
That's very nice. That's a nice little human moment that it's the kind of moment that the show working at its best, delivers.
For a show that was so breakneck in its in sort of what was happening all the time, I think that the conscious decision that was made at a certain point, my assumption is that they knew that they couldn't just do ER traumas all day long. Like at a certain point, they were going to have to do something and they were going to have to dig deeper, right?
Yeah.
And it's finding those quiet moments and finding those things and letting the actors breathe and sort of fill those spaces with the roles. I mean, Juliana Margulies is the reason that her absence is felt is because of what you're talking about. Like a cute scene like that, that she had tons of, because as nurses, for all intents and purposes, they have more of those quiet scenes with patients than the doctors do.
That's a good
point. So there's something very interesting about the way that she brings out what she brings out in those characters, even in the day players. I mean, I imagine the cavalcade of day players that Juliana Margulies must have worked with.
Amazing.
And she made them all better and they made her great. And it's really something special. The episode does end with a really nice moment. There's two things I want to mention. The first was she wakes up, Green tells her that she still has her uterus and that he fought for her, for them not to have a hysterectomy. Abby mirrors that and says, you have your friend to thank for any future children that you have.
Yeah.
He leaves. Carol asks Abby, she wants to make a long distance phone call to Seattle to call Doug. And she's like, you might need a calling card, which I thought was adorable.
I was like, oh, cute. It's 1999. Yeah. And that's the only reference to Doug apart from earlier where Mark's like, you want me to call? You know, essentially, like, do you want me to call Doug? Which again, very, very purposeful, because if they make it too much about Doug, then you're wondering why the fuck isn't she calling Doug?
Right.
To not acknowledge him at all, it was that weird thing the show had to do where it was like an elephant in the room, elephant out of the room.
They had to do something. They had to acknowledge it.
But it's fine and it works and, you know.
And then the very last shot is Carol breastfeeding her one child and then the other child starts to cry.
And there's just no one there to pick up the kid and that's lovely. That's just a beautiful little, and that's when you know, that's when you know she's leaving the show and she's gonna go back with Doug. Like, you know, if they didn't know before, it's like as they're shooting it, they're like, well, there's we can't write our way out of this. Yeah. Like she's, which is not to say a single mother can't raise twins on her own.
Of
course not. But it's a beautiful, it's a really beautiful little moment. It's very, it's cute. It's a little sad, but also her reaction is not, her reaction's really adorable. It's not, it's hard to explain what it is. It's not, she doesn't make a joke out of it, but she also doesn't, you know, break down. Like it's sort of like, well, here we are, which is kind of how it, I mean, even when you just have one kid, that's how it feels. Like you, and I'm again, speaking as the one who didn't give birth to them, breastfeed them. But when you have one, you go to sleep and then you wake up the next day or 2 days later, or maybe even for about a week. And every morning you wake up and for about 3 or 4 seconds, you don't remember you have a child. And then you do. And it's like, nothing's the same. And she sort of covers that little bit, like nothing's the same now. And that's, again, really lovely visual, you know, picture telling everything you need to know.
I agree with you. The look that Juliana Margulies gives at the end is one of overwhelmed, a little scared, a little bit, oh boy.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a joke there.
Yeah.
It's all very nicely done.
Which a great actor can do all that with
yeah.
a little look. I mean, that's what makes her, that's why she's and continued to be a star. I mean, it's funny. I'm amazed. I've never seen an episode of The Good Wife. I don't know why. I'm sure I'd love it. I love her.
Yeah,
I sadly know a little too much about what happens on it, which is maybe one reason, you know, but I really should watch it because she's just...
She's tremendous. And you know, she kind of went away for a while. Right. You know, she had some bit roles in some movies and what have you. And then she resurfaced in that, I think it was a Fox show called Canterbury's Law, which didn't do very well. She goes away again for a while. And then, you know, I remember when the Good Wife pilot was circulating and it was a cast contingent. It was a pickup by CBS if they could find somebody.
Oh.
If the producers could find someone, and Juliana Margulies lifted that cast contingency and thus you know, obviously turned into perhaps the last big, I mean, I guess This Is Us is maybe the whatever, but like The Good Wife felt like the last big broadcast show to win big awards and to kind of...
No, that was in the same conversation with all the cable stuff that was...
Yeah, it's a testament to Juliana, to the role of Carol Hathaway, which is a role that I a performance and a character that I think about very often when I'm thinking about, I hate to say this, but to say female characters, but it's one of my favorite female characters in terms of just a really beautiful arc that's really, really that defines itself and kind of like plants its feet and doesn't really move. And a lot of that has to do with, I think, Juliana saying, this is the character and I don't want you to fuck with it. And I don't want you to
push
into directions that feel too.
It seems that she had a lot of agency over it, you know, as it went on. And then, and obviously they knew that they had to keep her, that it was to their benefit to keep her happy and to seek her input. And, you know, and so I get the feeling it was a real collaboration there. It's great. And it's a nice episode. I mean, it's pretty focused, as we say. There's that Malucci thing is sort of over in a second.
Yeah.
And then that's about it, really. I mean, it's are there any other... Romano's not in it. Cleo Finch has three lines.
Benji's not in it.
Cleo has three lines.
Luca's barely in it, really. I mean, it's not really. There's not much there.
That's true. He disappears. Yeah. He loses a patient, which is sad, but, you know.
To one last question as we wrap this up. Do you have a favorite ER character?
Oh, do I have a favorite ER character? We've talked about this. Carter Benton. Mm-hmm. That's two characters.
That relationship is.
But that favorite. Relationship is my favorite.
Yeah.
I would say that. Yeah. I mean, Carter. I mean, it seems insane to say Carter the lead, but I really love Carter. I think they, you know, all the crazy turns his character took all made sense as it was happening, and I think it was so satisfying the way he was integrated back into the series in the final season.
I agree.
And that final episode is so satisfying. Like, it's incredible how much they nail that final episode. It is such the right mix of nostalgia and just well-executed drama.
It's crazy to think, and I'm sure you know this, but perhaps our listeners don't, which is that, so ER's final season was supposed to end with the Carol Doug episode, which is called Old Times, where...
That was the series finale?
That was supposed to be the series finale.
Oh, well, that's...
And what happened was, the show was doing well enough that John Wells basically anteed up to Warner Brothers or to NBC and said, we have to do this right.
Do this right.
Right. And they were given, I think, four more episodes, if I'm not mistaken, or something along those lines, in order to give that arc for Carter. Because Old Times, for people who haven't seen it, is basically an episode where Carter needs a kidney.
Yes.
Because of the stabbing and what have you. So he needs a kidney, and he just by happenstance bumps into Benton, who happens to also be at this hospital that he's getting this kidney.
Right,
at.
That's where Benton works now. Yeah,
that's where he works. Yeah. So they bump into each other. They have that whole thing. And Carol and Doug are working at a hospital where Susan Sarandon's grandson has been in a car accident. And
what they
it's
do
about organ donation.
They do the organ donation That's right. What they do. They
don't know at the end is to get Carter a
fucking
kidney.
Great. I mean, it would have been a weird series finale, but God, I remember just like, oh my God. Benton saves Carter's life by making, because he can't scrub in on him, but he makes the surgeon do the checklist.
Yes.
And the thing they needed to save him, they wouldn't have had if Benton hadn't been in there. God,
so like it does end. It's crazy to me to think that that would have been the series finale. It's, to your point, a standout, phenomenal episode in a final season. But for Absolutely. It to be the final episode would have been strange.
It would have been very strange. But it was also, and it also would have been a real slap in the face to the current cast.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it was the whole final season was kind of a slap in the face to the current cast because they're really like just there to sort of. Hang out and do their dopey subplots no one really cares about anymore while the returning yes. cast all got to have their yes. final laps.
And in the sun, yeah.
And everyone is a good sport about it. Anyway, Angela Bassett comes in yes. and God bless her and does uh-huh. her thing. And yeah. she's really just an excuse to get Mark Green back into mm-hmm. But it's, again, very effective episode. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I loved that. I loved that that the original cast reunites and inadvertently together saves Carter's
life. It's nice.
It's really nice.
And, then
Carol and Doug made sense in that episode. Like
exactly.
I love that.
And kudos to Julianna Margulies and George Clooney for showing up and doing just awesome. Great work. Their final scene together in bed at night when she's like, oh, I don't know if you know, but there was this doctor that we got.
Yeah, some doctor
like,
in Chicago.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, oh, she's like, well, that's nice.
I want to shout at them, it's Carter! You guys, it's Carter. Why don't you keep in touch with him anymore?
Right.
Why don't you keep
But then we get a four-episode arc that ends with a big episode, the proper series finale, directed by Ron Holcomb, who did the pilot. So there's a nice bookend to the whole thing.
And Carter opens a foundation in the name of the dead great. Son. The remaining cast that wanted the remaining original cast and other
could be
notable.
Yes.
That could be involved come for the event. Yep. And it's so effective.
It's nice. It's great.
And then the whole thing hinges on, is Carter going to come back to the ER? Mm-hmm. And he will. Like when he says to Dr. Mark's daughter, Dr. Green, are you coming? And it's like, oh, okay.
It's great. You know? He calls it, and Green's daughter, Rachel, is now a med student, and he calls to her. It also ends great. With, it's one of those like crazy money shots because it cost $1 billion, which they never did on the show, which is they pull out and pull out.
You're at county.
And you're just like, and you get to see this really just majestic shot of the L and
you
Chicago.
You actually see how it is in the geography of the city in a way you never
crazy.
Did.
It's crazy.
That set is normally in Burbank. so,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That was awesome. No, it was great. That finale was aces.
It was really good.
Carter. I think Carter's arc is
that's a good one.
And Benton, what about you? Who? I mean, is it?
It's a good question. I mean, I love Carter too. I'd be lying if I said that he probably wasn't my favorite. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, I really loved Carol Hathaway. I think she was given a really great arc throughout the series. I mean, to your point, Carter's the harder plane to land because that's over 15 seasons and they put him through so many ringers. but to your point, Noah Wiley sticks all those landings, and even with all those mm-hmm. crazy twists and turns along the way, where he lands at the end feels earned and it feels, you know, satisfying. So I agree with you. I'd be hard pressed to say anyone outside of Carter. I'll just say this. No character on the show makes me cry more than Carrie Weaver. There are scenes that she has.
Carrie would be maybe my second. Like, she
just break me because Laura Innes, amazing. Who's such a talented actress.
She's so great
but
in this
like,
episode. She's so great.
She's great in this episode.
Yeah.
When she softens, mm-hmm. and you see that humanity in her, it just fucking kills me. I think about the scene with Alan Alda when he's got Alzheimer's.
And that's season six, isn't it? That was a terrific subplot.
Yeah.
And he says that he's thing, like Hawkeye Pierce being on ER. Yeah.
Totally. It's lovely. Yeah. And he's got Alzheimer's and he doesn't want to admit it. And she says, I'll come and visit you. He's like, yeah, but I won't know that
I won't know you're there.
It's just like, it's good stuff. It's just really, really good stuff. So it's a great show filled with just the bench is so deep. It's a show that, like, I love watching it just to see people pop up to your you know, Kirsten
Dunst and your Taraji P. Hensons
and your whoever's. Like, it's just tremendous.
Rishka Hargitay had her thing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. So anyway, I could talk about it all day with
Come
you.
Come on, there's another 99 episode. Let's just do the third one. What's another one? There's got to be another
There's definitely another one we could do.
Come on.
But I just want to say, more than anything, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure.
Again, and talking ER.
Delight, as always.
It's the best, and it's you're the best. And
no, I really appreciated you truly. I'm really going to just now pop one on every once in a while.
You should.
I was just like, oh, this is great. This can be enjoyed this way. Just throw a random one on.
I mean, that's it is. And this is the last thing I'll say, and it's why I've thoroughly enjoyed doing these 99 miniseries on television shows from then, is that it was a different brand of television, right?
Absolutely.
It was a fork in the road, as I mentioned, you know, your Sex and the City, your Sopranos, we'll get into all of that. But the fact that you've got this show, that you've got Felicity, that you've got, you know, just bearing walls of my sort of television viewing of when I was growing up, and how comforting and comfortable these shows are. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, you know, I'm going to talk about The X-Files. I'm going to talk about Dawson's Creek and Ally McBeal and these shows that are just, you know, that you loved. And how could you not love them? They were just very comforting, comfortable television. And I think there's a place for that. And it's a bummer that it feels like we look down our nose at broadcast TV now in a way
as though
it's lesser than when it comes to streaming and cable. And I don't think that's true, but I also feel like, you know,
the proof is in the pudding. Like, they're all killing it streaming.
Yes.
I mean, ER and West Wing and Friends are as popular as ever, which is great. You know, they're not antiquated. They've got the new fans are coming to them, which is awesome.
It's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you again for coming on, and I look forward to having you back for something in the future.
Something.
It'd be great.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.